You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standing here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast, your daily conversation about the Washington Wizards, even in the offseason, coming to you guys Thursday morning, which is, of course, day one of the NBA Finals. Excited, finally, that we get some basketball, and I think we're all hoping it's some entertaining basketball. I'm personally rooting for Golden State. But, basketball is back. Excited for that, to see what's going to happen on this here podcast. Not going to talk about the NBA Finals. I did that on a recent podcast with NBC Sports' Dan Feldman. You can check that out, of course, on iTunes or Stitcher or Audio Boom. But on this here podcast, it's going to be our look at Bojan Bogdanović, our continued series on the Wizards season in review. We already did one on Otto Porter, this one on another small forward, and the other important potential free or restricted free agent for the Wizards this offseason. And to help me with that was Mr. Connor Dirks from truthaboutit.net. You can follow him on Twitter at Connor D. Dirks, a really smart, interesting, fun basketball guy. I always like talking to Connor about things. I'm glad he could join us for this. I ended up breaking this up into two parts because we went a little long. The second part, which I'll play for you guys tomorrow, is actually not really on Bogdanović, but it's about if Bogdanović were to leave, who are some potential players that the Wizards could maybe target as a replacement, and sort of with the idea of those guys who maybe, on some cases, could benefit playing with John Wall, maybe look to boost their current value by playing with Wall, and a couple, at least in one case, a young guy that maybe is ready to have a breakout moment. So that'll be part two. I'll put that up for Friday. If you missed it, though, also, I mentioned the Otto Porter season review, the conversation with Dan Feldman, which is about the NBA Finals, but probably even more importantly, about John Wall's contract. Really great insight, I thought, here from Dan, and a lot of looks at that, including the risk for the Wizards on both ends of that situation. And then, of course, I did a one-on-one with former NBA All-Star Kenny Anderson, talking about his career from a prep star to Georgia Tech to the NBA, and how things, as he's gotten older, sort of spiral out of control. And now he's here to talk about his trials and tribulations post-career and what message he's trying to get out there to the younger generation. All that, again, you can find that on iTunes, or wherever else you do your podcasting. You want to hit us up on Twitter, at Locked On Wizards, or at Ben Standing. I put up a tweet saying I was thinking about doing a mailbag. If you want to hit me up for that, you got any questions about the Wizards, the NBA draft, free agency, you want to ask me about the Mystics, you want to ask me about Georgetown, the NBA Finals, rock on, go for it. Hit me up on Twitter, at Ben Standing, or at Locked On Wizards. Or if you want, go old school a little bit, you can hit me up on email, bstandig1@gmail.com. And I'm always up for hearing your thoughts on the podcast, suggestions, ideas, always down for that. All right, let's get into this. Here's my conversation with Connor Dirks. We're going into the Bojan Bogdanović experience, what it all meant, or what it all means for the Wizards. All right, welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standig here. We're going to do another one of our world-famous Wizards player season reviews of the different players. Today's player will be Mr. Bojan Bogdanović, but simultaneously we're also going to dip into the idea of, if Bogdanović, a restricted free agent, doesn't come back, who might be some of the guys the Wizards could be interested in, or maybe who are we interested in for the Wizards. And by we, I mean myself and the man who'll be joining us today, Mr. Connor Dirks, another one of the great guys over at truthaboutit.net. Follow Connor on Twitter at Connor D. Dirks. He joins me here on the phone. I gotta get this
phone line. It's Bontard. But for now, Mr. Dirks, how are we doing today?
Pretty good, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. I hope I'm not blowing your location here, but you are somebody who was in the greater Brooklyn area, I guess. And so I thought to myself, well, you know what? Since Mr. Bogdanovich has essentially been in your worldview all year, because I don't know how much you paid attention to the Nets.
That's right.
But he was up there, obviously, with the Nets.
I saw Bogdanovich play against the Wizards earlier this year up here in Brooklyn.
Look at you went to the game and everything, right?
Yep.
Right. Well, all right. Well, there you go. So who better than to help us look back at Bojan Bogdanovic and ponder where things are going to go to next from him. But seeing as how this is your the first time I've had you on the podcast, which is a long overdue scenario, I guess let me just ask you the generic sort of question of what are, I guess, are you sort of over the Wizards having lost to the Celtics, and you know, where are you kind of now in your sort of Wizards analyst thinking now that they're, you know, we've a couple weeks removed from the end of the season?
Well, you know, losing to the Celtics in seven games obviously hurt. I think the Wizards, if were at least evenly matched, I know some folks think that they were the better team, and they may have been. But I think if you'd said at the beginning of the season that the Wizards would you know, lose in seven games at the end of the second round, you'd probably get what we have now, which is a mix of disappointment and also a little bit surprised after you know, the prior season when they disappointed. So I think I'm – I don't want to say I'm over it, because I definitely rooted for the Celtics to lose to the Cavs, which is not something I thought I'd ever do. So I'm not over it, but I'm feeling better about it. And I think overall it's not – I wouldn't call the Wizards season a disappointment by any measure.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you make the good point of, you know, if you go back to the beginning of the season, I mean, I know like John Wall himself said – when they got to game seven, you know, if you, you know, the ideas of that, he said, hey, if you told us, especially at 2-8, that we'd be playing for one game to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, I'd take it. Now, granted, he's hoping he's going to win that, but regardless, to be in that position is definitely something can't just dismiss, regardless of how, whatever feelings everybody got about the Wizards' potential and the disappointment when you ultimately lose. But, but yeah, and you know, obviously this sort of ties in with Bojan Bogdanovic, because at the time that they get to the All-Star break, you know, the Wizards at that point had the best record in the Eastern Conference for over 2 months.
Right.
And I think that's kind of on some level led to them saying, hey, we gotta make this move here. You know, regardless of the idea of whether, you know, the front office screwed up some of the offseason moves that put them in a position where they had to get more. Even regardless, they were in a position where they kind of needed to get more, because, hey, they're, you got to make that move. Essentially, all the teams – well, I shouldn't say all the teams, but Cleveland went ahead and got Kyle Korver. Toronto made moves to get Serge Ibaka and Phoenix? P.J. Tucker.
P.J. Tucker, yeah.
Celtics famously did nothing, but that's sort of a whole other story. But, you know, regardless, all those teams – didn't, you know, those other teams made moves, so you kind of had to keep up with the Joneses, if nothing else. And, you know, I think that sort of kind of led to the Bogdanovich move. So let's get
sure. And the Wizards, you know, the Wizards don't have the luxury of being the Cavs, where you know, whoever's the old veterans on the markets that can still make big shots in the playoffs, you know, desperately want to sign with you. So I think, you know, if you look at it through that lens, getting Bogdanovic when they did was – it's an understandable move.
Absolutely. So let's get into Mr. Bogdanovic, 6'8", small forward, sort of a swing man, but really not much of a guard. But forward from the Nets, a team that was clearly going nowhere, willing to trade veterans for anything that was resembling a future help. Bogdanovic was the leading scorer in the 2016 Summer Olympics, a proven scorer, shooter type, The Wizards definitely needed that. So going back to that time of that trade, again, the Wizards are hot, hottest team in the East. They definitely needed another shooter. They make that trade, which essentially was Andrew Nicholson, Marcus Thornton, and the 2017 first round pick to Brooklyn for Bogdanovich. And let's not forget Chris McCullough, even if everybody
no, can't forget him.
Can't forget him. So we'll do our traditional who, what, where, when, why of it all. This one does. We'll start with a two-parter here at the top. What were your feelings at the time of the trade? And not to be a snarky son of a bitch, but when will you get over the Wizards trading away Nicholson and Thornton?
Okay. At the time of the trade, I think my thoughts were kind of a quiet resignation that, you know, this is a Washington Wizards move. You know, you trade away a mid to late first round pick for some immediate help. And not just immediate, and, you know, there's Markieff Morris, he's still on the Wizards, but in this case it was immediate and not all that permanent help. So I think at the time I recognized that this is a move they need to make, or it's similar to a move they need to make. But I think there's always that disappointment that, you know, you feel when the team you follow or cover is not going to be involved in the first round of another draft. As far as my disappointment in trading away Marcus Thornton, I think I was over it before they even traded him. So I got over that disappointment very quickly. And I think it was one of the more indefensible things the Wizards did over the last summer was signing him. It just never made much sense to me. So with him being gone, it frees up a roster spot that could be used for almost anyone else.
Yeah, you're definitely taking that part of it way too seriously. It was a yeah. I mean, I've stated here repeatedly that even though he was of all the free agent moves, he was the cheapest signing they made. It was sort of the weirdest one to me. And I've said before, you know, from what I was told, it was sort of a favor, I guess. He was part of the whole Bartlestein contingent that ended up here, which included Nicholson and part of Bradley Beal's.
Brad Beal, yeah. One.
I don't know why you necessarily had to do all that stuff, but I leave that for the, you know, people in big business. So, yeah, ultimately, Thornton was just whatever. The Nicholson part of it all, I mean, you know, they gave away that first-round pick really because it was a way to get rid of Nicholson's contract.
Right.
Which is helpful for
Yeah, Nick. And that one's a little bit, you know, that one's a little bit more confusing because, you know, when the Wizards signed Nicholson, I remember being like, well, you know, he's young. And then he played like the oldest man in the league. All season. So that was confusing. But again, his contract, he wasn't going to play for the Wizards in this year or next. So you pick up Bogdanovich, you lose, you know, sadly, Andrew Nicholson and Marcus Thornton, and a first round pick, of course. So it's a trade that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Even in retrospect.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, at the end of the day, regardless of what happens and what the end result may be, if we, you know, swing it to the forward, may be that Bogdanovich only played, you know, half a season, essentially, including the playoffs, for the Wizards, and they gave up a first-round pick. It's very conceivable. We'll get more into this in a little bit. It's very conceivable he doesn't come back. He's a restricted free agent.
Yep.
You know, if the Wizards are going to keep Otto Porter and they don't have too much space to do other things, and, you know, starts getting complicated when you start going to tax, yada yada yada. I wish I was smarter when it came to the NBA finances, but, you know, I'll take NBA accounting some other day. But it's fairly likely Bogdanovich isn't going to be able to come back unless they make a move somewhere else that somehow frees up enough space for them to feel comfortable that they can do that. But even with all that said, because they had played so well, it wasn't just like they were interesting. It wasn't just like they were going to make the playoffs. They were realistically playing so well at that point that they had a shot to contend in the East. And the reality is that's how it played out. I'm not saying they would have ever beaten Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals, even if they had beaten Boston.
But
they
had
a shot.
they had a shot. And for the Wizards, the mark of someone who is being realistic is like John Wall, right? He always said the Eastern Conference Finals was their goals. He wasn't saying the NBA Finals even. And, you know, you get used to people in professional sports and basketball specifically, you know, saying, oh, well, our goal, of course, is to win a championship. But, you know, for Wall and I think everyone else, they saw the Eastern Conference Finals as kind of a goalpost. So I think picking up Bogdanovich while they were already hot and kind of streaking towards the postseason. And if you remember, they had a chance before the final five, six games to maybe move up a few more spots in the playoff seeding order before failing to do that. So, you know, there was a legitimate chance that they could really make a run and make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. So if they don't make the move, imagine what people would be saying.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, look, I mean, it's weird. You know, I always make this point that in college basketball, the idea of making the semifinal, i.e. the Final Four, is seemingly the goal for 95% of the teams, right? I mean, unless you're the Dukes and Carolinas and, you know, some of the power conference schools playing in the Nets, making the Final Four is like the ultimate dream. Yet, when you talk about it in professional sports, that the goal on some weird level is to make the semifinals, the Final Four, that seems odd. But realistically, for the Wizards, LeBron is a cyborg. And, you know, the Wizards have obviously not gotten this far, since, you know, hadn't gotten to the conference finals since 1978-79. So if they could have done that, that would have been a big goal, even if they had lost to the Cavs in five games the way the Celtics did. So at the end of the day, making the move for Bogdanovich, I didn't have any issue with even understanding that the restrict, you know, that he could be done after, you know, the end of this season. I think it was worth the risk. I wasn't that upset about the fact that they didn't get Lou Williams, who I know everybody was sort of salivating over, and Lou Williams got traded right before the Wizards made the move. The only thing I would have said is, basically, I mean, without going too nutty here, Houston got Lou Williams essentially for the exact same trade that the Wizards gave up to get Bogdanovich. The only difference was Houston gave up Corey Brewer, whose deal I believe expires. It's either this year or maybe one more year, where Nicholson has three more years. And I think that's ultimately why that deal went down. The Lakers took that deal. But if the Wizards could have gotten Lou Williams, I think just using his, like, say, 20 minutes a game behind Wall and Beal might have benefited the team overall, whereas with Bogdanovich, between him, Otto Porter, and Oubre, there was a little bit too much overlap on some level, but yet not
pretty crowded.
Yeah, yet none of them were really – you couldn't really play any of them at power forward. You also couldn't really play any of them at the two. So it ultimately didn't probably work out completely well from a minute standpoint, but that's sort of minor. At the end of the day, I won't go back on it. I had no issue with the trade.
Sure. And you know, one thing, though, that I think I heard the other day is that, you know, the Wizards are planning to treat Chris McCullough as their first-round pick. Now, I've got no problem with the Bogdanovich trade, but that strikes me as pushing the luck a little bit far. I mean, you know, the Nets traded McCullough for a late first, so – I'm not saying they've got the best scouting department in the world, but they obviously don't think he's, you know, going to be a first round pick worthy moving forward. And they need young prospects there. So I'm fine with the trade. I wouldn't try to PR it or sell it up for anything more than it is. So.
Right. And it'll definitely be interesting to one of the things to watch in summer league this year will be McCullough, who none of us saw play. I mean, whatever he did in the D League, none of us watched it realistically. And, you know, he didn't play enough with the Nets to really tell anything, and he didn't play with the Wizards at all. So, D League will be interesting just to see what he can do out there on the court this summer. All right, let's get to the where of it all, as in, where were you when Bogdanovich turned into Larry Bird on steroids? Because he showed up. I mean, the first game he didn't do much. The second game he goes 6-for-7 from three at Toronto, when it was a big win for the Wizards. And then two games later, he goes like 8-for-10. So basically, in between, he went 0-for-2 in a game. In a three-game span, he went 14-from-19 from three with an 0-for-2 in there. I mean, it was almost to his detriment, because he put the bar so insanely high that thought that's what he was. But at the same point, it's like, holy, even in games where he would go 2-for-5, you're like, well, yeah, but we're 6-for-7. Come on, man.
Well, I was with my esteemed colleagues, Kyle Weedye and John Townsend of Truth About It, in a bar up here in Brooklyn, during one of the games where he went Larry Bird on steroids. And I think it really did, in a strange way, hurt him long term because it forced teams to actually take him seriously in a way that they may not have if he had just flown under the radar a little bit more. And of course, it set, like you said, set expectations pretty high. But it was also really exciting. And the Wizards have really, really, really needed a guy who can shoot from the outside and has good size, which Bogdanovich has. He could be a better defender, but I mean, those were exciting games, and John Wall is always going to bring up your shooting percentage. But it was fun to see him, blow up right from the get-go.
Yeah, I went to the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. I flew out there that day, and so I was that night was doing the meet and greet or whatever you want to call it. Doing the going around whatever various bars or establishments that people were hanging out in. And I
Sure.
think the Wizards, I don't know, was it a national TV game or? I don't know. For some reason, the game was on TV at the bars, and I kept looking up. I'm like, "What? Whoa! What is he missing? Like, what is going on here?" I mean, it was unbelievable. And then 2 games later, they were back. Or when he went 8 for 10, it was against Orlando in at Verizon Center. And boy, I mean, it was, it was spectacular. I mean, I think, like you said, I think ultimately it probably sort of hurt the perception. It doesn't really perception really doesn't matter, but it sort of hurt because like I one of the questions I was going to say to you is why do you think he didn't sort of keep up the pace? And yet, if you look at it, I mean, he did. He shot 39% from three during
But
the.
which would be a career best for him, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah,
None of
absolutely.
he's never shot over 39% in any season.
Right. And in the playoffs it was down to 36, but that's hardly a disaster. I think ultimately what happened was, and you saw, I think you saw the simultaneously with him and with Otto Porter, defenses I just think decided when these guys are in the game, we're not gonna leave them. Seemed like there was more face guarding going on, more of teams saying, we're gonna take away that passing option for John Wall. If Markieff Morris can beat us from three, maybe we'll deal with it. But we're not gonna leave these guys, and also we're gonna sort of simultaneously clog the paint with our big man, so John Wall doesn't, kind of can't see as well.
Carve them up.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that was a change the defense has made, and I mean,
Yeah,
look.
and it's not like he had a bad playoffs either. I mean, he went back to around his career average in 3-point shooting, played around 20 minutes a game. It was a really nice cog for the Wizards. And I'm imagining the Wizards without him in the playoffs, and it's just one less threat. Which is going to make the offseason really interesting.
And also, when you go back to the idea of trading for him, look, he obviously is a heck of a shooter and can score, but the one thing he isn't is a guy that can really create for himself on the NBA level. And
Right.
that's the thing. Also, when you talk about making that move, you can only to some degree, the market is what it is. And he was, I think realistically, probably the best thing they could get, within reason for what they had to give up. But he wasn't what they really kind of needed. What they needed going back to last offseason was another creator, somebody else on the team besides Wall and Beal who could get their own. And the fact that he played with Brandon Jennings primarily in the backcourt, Brandon Jennings
Yeah.
could create some shots, but he's not the classic. Well, I don't even know what Brandon Jennings was. He was sort of all over the place, but you know what I mean? Because that second unit offense never really got going, obviously. I think that just hurt Bogdanovich. He was probably at his best playing with the starters, but when you've got Otto Porter and Bradley Beal, it's not like he's going to do that too much. So
Right.
that lack of second unit cohesion didn't, I don't think it helped his cause.
Yeah, I mean, how many years has it been since the Wizards had a second string point guard that really could run the second unit. I mean, I like Ramon Sessions. I like Antonio Daniels. Maybe that's going too far back, but everything else in between, it's really been a struggle for them to find the guy who can stay for more than 1 year and run the second unit.
Yeah, I mean, Andre Miller was probably the most efficient, like, player they have, but obviously by the time he was here, you know, he was, you know, at the tail end of his lengthy career. So he had what he gave them from a pass first point guard type, he lacked in other areas. Ramon Sessions was sort of the opposite. He could get to the rim better than almost everybody on the team and get to the foul line, but he wasn't really great at running the offense per se, which is why I was down with them finding a different guard. Trey Burke was not my ideal.
Ben, that wasn't your first choice?
No, not my first choice there. Let's get to the why of it all, as in, why do you think the Wizards should or shouldn't keep him? I mean, like I said before, I think this really just comes down to, can they afford it? Are they going to go into the luxury tax to do it? I think when I had on Dan Feldman from NBC Sports on the other day, and I think he was telling me that only basically two teams this past year, I think the Cavs and the Clippers, were in the luxury tax. I don't personally think the Wizards will go there, but it just doesn't, you know, it's not something that a lot of teams do anyway, so I can't even pick on the Wizards too much if they don't. And at the end of the day, look, Bogdanovich is going to want to get paid. I think there's probably a reasonable chance when you look at the free agents out there, which we will do in a second, that somebody's going to give him a reasonable money over several years. And I don't think the Wizards can justify it, especially if you're going to give Otto Porter anywhere close to max money or whatever he's going to get, plus you have Kelly Oubre, plus you have Bradley Beal, where are you playing Bogdanovich, right? So if there was a clear space for Bogdanovich to get real minutes, then I could maybe consider giving him more, whatever. I'd be down with them keeping him, but they're going to have – it basically would involve them making some move, whatever it is, moving Gortat or something to free up enough money to somehow make this work. But realistically, since I can't see him playing real minutes behind Beal, and same with Otto or Oubre, I'd like to keep him. I just don't think it probably makes a lot of sense ultimately for them to do it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, although, you know, it's always a bummer when you you know, you burn a first rounder and then you only get half a season from a guy. You know, if it's affordable and it works, then I'm like you, I'd love to see Bogdanovich sign with the Wizards again, but unless they're doing something a little drastic to make some space, like clearing out Gortat, trading Gortat, or you know, Otto, not signing and not matching on an Otto offer sheet, then I just don't see it happening. I'm not sure. They obviously like Oubre, and sometimes with good reason. You know, Wall and Beal are locked down in the guard spots mostly. You have, if you do re-sign Otto or extend Otto, then I just don't know. It's just one of those things that you have to kind of let a guy go in that situation and try to find a more affordable backup option that can play, because if Bogdanovich is going to, you know, want 7, 8, 9 million a year, which he may, then I don't think the Wizards can afford that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, I'm totally with you. Like, if, you know, if the second he signs an offer sheet to go play for whatever, Sacramento, Phoenix, whatever, you know, maybe Brooklyn says, hey, come on back, whatever it is, the second he signs that and, you know, the Wizards, you know, officially say they're going to pass, everybody's going to say, oh boy, the Wizards, what a disaster, whatever. And, you know, it definitely won't be a great look. Again, I go back to when they made the trade at the time. I'm just going to, you know, as I think we both said, I'm realistic. I thought it was a reasonable trade, even understanding the risk. And, you know, it is what it is. But you can't make, you know, I guess you can't, you know, it's not wise to make things necessarily worse if you give him money and now all of a sudden you're, like I said before, you're in this position where you have all these guys and, you know, it's hard to figure out how you're going to justify the minutes, where are they all going to play? How are they going to work defensively? You still don't have somebody off the bench you can create, and now you're maybe going into the tax or whatever it is. So it would be cool if they could figure out how to keep him, but if they don't, just based on that, just based on the reality of this, forget the pick, I would understand if they didn't.
Sure. If it's super affordable, if no one, I can't imagine this happening, but if, no one really shows much interest in him in the restricted free agent market and the Wizards can get him on the cheap, great. But I just think he's going to command more than that, especially given the year that he had. John Wall gets people paid. It's a gift and a curse. And the Wizards don't have that much money. And if they sign Otto, then these are like the decisions that make or break a team's long-term future. If you have if you're overpaying your role players, there's really not enough left in the bank for you to actually make a move to help your team with someone really significant. So they've got to be careful.
All right, and like I said, I end our conversation there with Connor, but there's more to come. Specifically, a whole bunch of players that, at sort of at that wing position, small forward or shooting guard, that we think might be interesting fits for the Wizards should Bojan Bogdanović not return. Combination of veterans, some young players maybe could have their stock boosted by playing with John Wall. Some who. A little bit risky, but some interesting names. So I'll put that up for you guys on deck. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. More to come here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standick signing off. And until next time, see ya.
Everybody just Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Bobby Sy caught. Home run, off the shot. Dagger!